The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
A Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, has called on consultants to step up and do their part to fix the overcrowding issue at University Hospital Limerick. The Minister said that fixing the issue of overcrowding would not happen unless consultants engaged with management on the public-only consultant contract, the POCC, we'll call it POC for short. So what is stopping the consultants engaging in this way? Well, Peter O'Rourke is a retired orthopaedic surgeon and he's on the line now. Peter, good morning.
Good morning.
Can you explain what's not attractive about the public-only contract? Because the money's good, it would appear, and the hours are fixed, it would appear, and there's a pension attached. So what's not to like?
Well, if you can make more not signing the contract, that's the sole reason for staying off the contract. I mean, one of the things that people signing the contract will have to give up is the potential to gain income from private patients treated in a public hospital. Like the Minister has always suggested, this would free up beds for public patients, and that's absolute rubbish. If you're, for instance, in Limerick or a lot of the Dublin hospitals, a significant proportion of the emergency cases that are admitted are private, and that's a source of income for consultants. I mean, if you take Limerick as an example, the private insurance rate is about 40 or 50%. So if consultants down there sign up for the new contract, they won't get paid for treating private patients in a public hospital. That's a disincentive, and it also restricts the amount of time they can spend outside the hospital in a private hospital doing private work as well. So while the salary is very good, they can make multiples of the salary from private patients in addition to that.
Mm-hmm. People will wonder why they don't just separate them all out. Public hospitals for public patients. I mean, all of us, whether we have insurance or not, if you end up, you know, on the side of the road having been hit by a car, you'll be taken by ambulance into the public ED. That's the reality. So
that's true.
Why not separate everything out? If you want private medicine, you go to a private hospital where you have a private consultant with no public contract looking after you. And then if you go the other way, you go into a public hospital, public bed, public consultant. Why not separate the two?
Well, you can, but who would benefit? The patients wouldn't benefit. The only beneficiaries of that would be the private insurance companies who have been pushing this for years. I mean, for years they were asking patients who went into a public hospital not to use their private insurance. So they benefit from that. The hospital benefits from treating private patients in a public hospital because it gains money from the insurance companies. In Mary Harney's time, she used to berate consultants for treating private patients in public hospitals and then berate us for not sending out the bills quick enough. Hospitals were generating between 15 and 16% of their annual income from private patients. And if a hospital back in my day had a budget of, say, 100 million, the government were only giving them 84 million, and they're expected to make the other 16 from private insurance companies.
So when you see what Stephen Donnelly had to say, he said Limerick has one of the lowest uptakes of the new public-only consultant contract. The level of weekend discharge is not where it needs to be. Many consultants were working night and day, he said, to help tackle patient flow. But he expected more to be rostered on site in the emergency department and throughout the hospital after hours and at weekends, because he says you need senior clinical people to be able to monitor the care and the discharge of patients to make sure that trolleys are freed up for incoming people.
Well, the Minister comes out with a lot of sound bites which actually don't make any sense and shows a significant lack of understanding of what happens. One of his big ones is increasing the number of emergency medicine consultants, so this will reduce the number of patients being admitted to hospitals. Emergency medicine consultants don't admit people to hospital. It is only a hospital consultant who actually takes them in. Once they leave the emergency department, they're nothing to do with emergency medicine consultants, and they don't actually make the decision. So that will make absolutely no difference.
What does the emergency consultant then do? I mean, they're
there in the care.
Beg your pardon?
They do the primary care in the emergency department, so does the acute care, and then pass the patient on to a hospital consultant who admits them to the ward.
Okay.
So they do the acute care.
So when they get a patient who's badly injured or badly sick, they decide this person cannot go home. This is what the ED consultant does, having effectively gone through their ailments. This person cannot go home, has to be admitted. And after that, they're finished with that patient, and it goes to a consultant who's working within the general body of the hospital, and that patient can only be discharged by the consultant who's then in charge of their care.
No, it's even more simple than that. The emergency department consultant does not make the decision to admit to the patient. They refer the patient to a service, be it orthopaedic, surgery, urology or medicine, and they make the decision to admit the patient. Not every patient who is seen by a hospital team is admitted. So the emergency medicine consultant does not make the decision to admit. They have no admitting rights to the hospital.
Okay, so they forward on.
One of the things he doesn't understand.
They forward on the patient to one, two, or even three consultants, depending on the nature of their injuries. For example, you might have someone in car accident who's got burns and broken limbs and perhaps abdominal injuries, and there might be three different surgeon consultants looking after that patient. So increasing the number of ED consultants would not make any difference. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it doesn't make any difference because they're not the people who actually admit people to the hospital. They are involved in the acute care and the acute management of patients, but ultimately they do not admit people to hospital. Mm. This is one of the ministers puts this frequently, but it's not correct. The only reason people are spending so much time in emergency departments is because there's nowhere for them to go. We've talked about the emergency department crisis for years. It has never been an emergency department crisis. It has been a bed crisis. But building new emergency departments doesn't give the patients anywhere to go. And it is a lack of beds, and always has been, which is the limiting factor. And when you have a lack of beds, you take beds from everywhere you can. And that's why elective surgery beds or planned surgery beds are used for emergency care, which means that you cannot do the planned surgery. And that's why we have the NTPFs, I think this year spending €250 million euros sending planned surgical treatment to private hospitals.
Now, the question of discharging from University Hospital Limerick, and the minister has talked of an additional 86 beds, including 16 rapid build beds at UHL, 50 step down beds in Nina, and 20 community healthcare beds in Clare, which would be provided in advance of next year's winter surge. Now, that's fine. You've got 86 beds, and when they're full, what then, I ask? But anyway, let's hold that thought for a moment. If you have those beds available, but no consultant working on the weekend to discharge them, is that not the minister's point? Because he points out that UHL is ninth in the rankings of rapid discharge at weekends. In other words, not very good at it.
Well, yeah, it is a factor involved in it, but there's other reasons for the delays in discharges. Part of the problem is diagnostics. For instance, if you come in on a Friday, you might have to wait till Monday to get certain blood tests done. You might have to wait till Monday to get an MRI scan done. The only thing in the short term that will alleviate beds is having cardiac investigations, laboratories and X-ray working 15, 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, rather than working 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. It is investigations which delay discharges. Yeah. And having worked in, I only retired 3 years ago, we would know in orthopedics when our patients were due to go home. And even if we weren't there, there would be a discharge plan available. So if there's patients aren't being discharged, it's usually because there is no home backup for them. There is no, they're discharge delayed because waiting for investigations. But that is the main reason. And having a senior member of staff there at the weekend, one, if you have a consultant, there's 200 medical patients and you have three consultants, the chances are they would only know their patients. They wouldn't know every one of the 200 patients, so they won't be able to discharge them.
Well, one would presume that unless they have competence in those particular fields, they wouldn't take it upon themselves to discharge somebody. Do you know?
True.
And if you're orthopaedic, you're not going to discharge someone who came in with a suspected sepsis.
True, exactly. But even if you have a physician, if you have a hospital where they have 30 physicians and five of them are there on the weekend, they only know 1/6 of the patients, and they're not in a position to discharge patients that they don't know.
Okay, but here's the rub. When you've got a large hospital, and that was the whole idea of the closing down of smaller hospitals and the agglomeration of all services So you have what's called critical mass. In other words, enough patients are going through each department so that they have the experience to cope with anything that is thrown at them. But if then they can be discharged in an orderly way Monday to Friday, the question has to be asked, why not Monday to Sunday? In other words, most services that are vital are available all weekend. Now, you say it's diagnostics and all of that. Is that a union problem? Is it a HSE problem? Is it the problem of the Secretary General of the Department of Health, who's so well paid to look after all of these things?
It's a problem of all of those things, which ironically doesn't seem to be as big an issue in the private sector.
So are you saying that in the private hospitals... I mean, I know of someone who went at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night for a scan.
Yeah, well, you try getting one a scan in a public hospital at 10 o'clock at night, and you won't manage it. So there is elements of, you know, unions and work practices as well. But the other thing is that you mentioned sort of 5 days a week, Monday to Friday.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Monday to Friday. If there's 40 physicians in a hospital, there's 40 physicians there every day, Monday to Friday. If they're at the weekend, there might be four or five physicians, but there isn't the 40 to 50 during all the who know all the patients. And that's the limiting factor. You can only have a certain service there out of hours.
But are consultants willing to work on a 7 day roster? Even if they're doing, you know, on the old contract where they're doing private and public, are they willing to work on 7 days? Now, I've spoken to consultants who often say they come in on their own time over the weekend to meet their patients and see how they're doing and possibly discharge them. But does that need to be more formalized so that people are not languishing for a weekend when they might well be at home?
Can I ask what you mean by 7 day roster, that they should work 7 days every week?
No, I'm saying that you spread, if you say 40 physicians you talk about, well, if you divide that into seven, it means, you know, six people. So why wouldn't you spread the load? Do you know what I mean? Not everyone would have to work 7 days a week, but you might find yourself working 7 days on this week and maybe 3 days the following week in order to give a 7 day cover.
It sounds great in theory, but in practice, the result of that is that for the days you're not there, be it the weekend or midweek, or you're not there to discharge the patients who, and you know the patients. If you work sort of a weekend, are you going to be off on Monday and Tuesday? And then means nobody is going to be there for continuity of care. But the difficulty is
Peter, I'm just struggling with this because, like, if one of my producers goes on holidays, you know, the program still gets done because other people are briefed. To make the program happen. And I'm wondering, with all the non-consultant hospital doctors that are there at the disposal of the senior guys, can they not brief those patients? And if, you know, if something untoward happens, a WhatsApp would not be out of the question to check with the consultant. Listen, you were going to discharge this person on Saturday morning because that's what you told me. However, the temperature's now at 104. You know, their bloods are looking very dodgy. I'm not going to discharge them, even though you said I should discharge. What's wrong with that kind of communication?
But that is what is already happening. You see, there's an assumption that these things aren't happening, that suddenly the minister says, we all signed this contract, we're available 7 days a week, and it'll suddenly change things. I mean, the fact that he thinks a contract will cause this to be the new system doesn't mean it is going to be the new system, and it doesn't mean it isn't already in place. Everybody reinvents the wheels and thinks that doctors are doing nothing. I certainly know if one of my patients was sick, I'd get a call and I'd deal with it when I was there or not. The volume of patients that people are dealing with, it's sometimes very difficult to do that. I mean, a physician on call could end up with 50 or 60 new patients being admitted overnight, and then trying to even sort them out, let alone make sure everything is organised them for the next 2 or 3 days is very difficult. But if you, say, for instance, are on at a weekend and then suddenly on Monday or Tuesday you're off, then the same problem arises as on a Friday going onto a Saturday and Sunday.
I just wonder how other services, not the health service, but other services that run 7 day a week, you know, whether it's Dublin Bus or whoever it might be, they have ways to make sure that the trains and the buses and the trams and the darts and all that actually continue to run at the weekend. you know, they roster people accordingly to make sure that whatever the demand is at the weekend is met by the personnel. It surely is not beyond the wit of the HSE top management to figure something out.
It sounds simplistic, but unfortunately healthcare isn't simplistic and things can change very rapidly. I mean, certain specialties lead themselves to it. For instance, orthopedics, my specialty. I mean, most often we know when a patient is admitted, when they're going to be discharged, and we can plan that. But unfortunately, it isn't possible with a lot of medical conditions. For instance, if you're waiting for results of tests. I mean, I've had situations where, for instance, you book an MRI scan and the next available scan is 5 days' time and the patient is sitting in a bed lying there for 5 days because they can't get the scan.
That is bad management. It's bad use of resources. I mean, if the patient can get their scan at 2 a.m., the patient would be delighted if it means not spending another 5 days in hospital. The hospital may delight in the insurance money that might follow that stay, but it's not the best way to run a business. By the way, I have a text here from Alan Kelly, the TD, the Labour TD. The people of Nina will oppose the loss of 50 beds in our nursing home 100%. Where will those patients go? Two wrongs don't make a right, says Alan Kelly. Before I let you go, Peter, I know you've been outspoken on the business of the Children's Hospital when you were talking to our colleague, Kira Kelly, and suggesting that if all the scoliosis operations were lined up for the new Children's Hospital when it opens, predicted it to be the second quarter of next year, that unless you've got the surgeons, unless you've got everything that goes with those surgical treatments, it's not going to solve the problem.
Well, I don't know that they're going to have enough staff to run all the theatres that they need. And basically, intensive care and theatre staff are probably the higher trained nurses and the ones in most demand. And I don't think they'll have enough when they take all the staff from Temple Street and Crumlin. So I don't think there'll be a sudden reduction in all the waiting list. I think it'll be years before it makes any inroad in the waiting list.
All right, Peter O'Rourke, retired orthopaedic surgeon. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.